Hey, hey, welcome to another episode of Cream City Dreams, the podcast that brings you incredible Milwaukee women who are doing incredible things for our city and for our kids. This season, season five, I'm focusing on women who work with or for or around children or mothers. And today on the show, oh my goodness, Dr. Michelle Pickett. I am so excited for you to hear this episode. So many gems, so much good advice for parents of teens or future teens. So if you're not a parent or a parent of a future teen, maybe you could forward this episode to someone who is, because they're going to want to hear this stuff. Because today we're talking about sex. That's right. If you have young children listening, turn it up. They need to hear this too. Or use your discretion. Maybe you want to listen to it first and then talk about it together. Use this as an episode that you can listen to with your teen to get the conversation started. I don't want to give too much away. So without further ado, Dr. Michelle Pickett. Today on the podcast, I am delighted to welcome Dr. Michelle Pickett. Dr. Pickett is an emergency department physician for Children's Wisconsin and an associate professor of pediatrics for the Medical College of Wisconsin. In 2018, Dr. Pickett piloted a suicide screening program at Children's Wisconsin that has become a standard part of the care and the intake for kids 11 and older who come in for treatment at Children's ER. So, holy cow, talk about saving lives. Dr. Pickett, thank you for being here.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me, first off, Megan. And also, please call me Michelle.
No okay.
The doctor stuff. Too formal. Yeah, saving lives. It's fun. It's stressful. It's rewarding.
Yes. Yes to all of the above. I'm excited because you were recommended by another one of our previous guests, Dr. Megan Schultz, as somebody that she saw as dreamy and doing really important work. And what's funny is when Megan recommended you, she talked about the work you were doing around STIs and adolescent sexual health. And here I'm sort of thinking, like, if I didn't have to worry about the copyright police coming to get me, that I should start the podcast with a little salt and pepper, you know, let's talk about sex.
Yeah.
But when I started preparing for this podcast, I've mostly run across your work with suicide prevention, but I know that, or I think that, and you can correct me, that the sexual health work is sort of more current in what you're working on now. Am I right there?
I wear both hats, I should say. My number one love and baby is the sexual health stuff.
Okay.
So I have been interested in adolescent sexual health care for a very long time. I think since I've been in medicine, I have just found it interesting talking to teens and what can we do to help teens and kind of risk reduce when it comes to STIs and pregnancy, pregnancy prevention and all that stuff. Recently, as in kind of 2018, in addition, I started with the suicide prevention stuff. It actually stemmed from STI work. We knew that there was a study coming around, a multi-center study, so I was going to lead it at our site. Okay. And my boss at the time, his name was David Brousseau, he knew that the study would be coming through if I got funded, that I'd be working doing it. And it was essentially using tablets to screen adolescents for their sexual risk and then provide screening in the emergency department. And so he thought, hey, you know, we're going to be part of the study. I'm going to have you do it, but let's get the technology working before the study comes. So let's start using tablets to do screening. How about something simple like suicide screening?
What? Something simple.
Ooh. Yeah, something simple. And it falls within, you know, kind of my realm too. I love working with teens in general, and mental health is obviously a huge component when working with teens, in addition to sexual health care. And, you know, I like talking to teens about all those things. So it really was kind of a natural fit and a natural pairing. So that's kind of how we started our kind of universal suicide screening program, and that has kind of taken off and is, you know, I think there's a lot of light on mental health care right now. That has kind of, I think, propelled me and my career forward, and I enjoy doing that. Like I said, the STI stuff I'm still doing and still love is just...
So we still get to talk about sex.
We still get to talk. We always get to talk about sex. If you were around me, that would...
I love it. Let me just put a pin in that topic for just a second, because I want to go backwards. This is a podcast about women who dream and women who we see as living their dreams. And so I want to just talk a little bit about who you are. Like, when you were a kid, was this your dream to be a doctor? Were you always?
Yeah, it actually was. I always wanted to be a doctor. I'm one of those kids that I would go to my doctor and actually liked to go and see my doctor. I always thought I'm going to be a pediatrician. When I applied to medical school, like, I wrote about my own pediatrician and how that was kind of part of my inspiration. And now I see him around at times and I'm like, hi, how's it going? You know, he's still asking about my parents and my sister. But so I've always wanted to do that. I never thought I would be pediatric emergency medicine though. I anticipated that I'd be working in, you know, if my dream came true and I was a doctor, that I would work in a clinic, an outpatient clinic, and have my patients and kind of watch them grow up kind of as he did with me. I was one of his very first patients out of residency from the day I was born till I was in college, and he's like, it's time to move on. Michelle, you are too old for
You can do it.
Yes, you can do it. Go. And so that's kind of what I envisioned my work being, but it took a little bit of a turn, and now I'm in the emergency department, and I couldn't imagine doing anything different.
Yeah. Well, and Megan, when she was on the podcast, talked about this inciting moment that she had had when she was in, I think it was Baltimore, where a student that she was working with, because she was teaching at the time, got shot. And that was kind of the impetus that got her to go back to school and get into the medical scene, and particularly pediatrics. And was there an inciting, I mean, I know this inspiring pediatrician, but was there an inciting moment that switched you into ER?
Yeah. So I was working in the ER. It was during my residency. Again, I thought I would be a general pediatrician, was doing one of my rotations in the emergency department. And one of the fellows, and then a fellow is after a residency, if you're doing a subspecialized program like pediatric emergency medicine, you have to do a fellowship and you're a fellow during that. Okay. So I was in Kansas City at the time and talking to her, and she had said, you know, have you ever thought about doing this? You're kind of good at it. And I was like, I'm going to be done. I've had enough training. It's time for me to go live my life. And, you know, that kind of stuck with me. And I kind of started thinking, and I always had this thought that there was no organ system that I liked enough to always specialize in that. Like the heart, it's cool. I don't love it enough to only do heart patients or the lungs or anything like that. So as I'm thinking, I'm like, well, I guess that doesn't really like break my organ rule, because I still would see a variety of things. And I would say I briefly did think about specializing in adolescent medicine. And while I love teens, I don't know if I could do teens always 24/7.
I can understand.
Yeah. But so I kind of got to thinking, and I was like, I do actually enjoy being here in this emergency department. I like it when I'm here. And that kind of set things into motion. And I was like, okay, well, if this is something I'm going to consider, I need to start doing some research so I can be a competitive kind of applicant. And I happened to be working one night and was talking to one of my mentors. He was working overnight. She also does research. And she was like, well, what are you interested in? I'm like, adolescent sexual health care. She's like, well, that is perfect, because that's actually what I do. And there's like a very few handful of us who do pediatric emergency medicine and adolescent sexual health care research, so in the country. And so it was perfect timing that I happened to be working with her that day and bring it up. And she kind of took me under her wings and kind of, you know, started trying research. I had a research project, and it has kind of escalated from there. So it's those two women, I guess, were kind of very inspiring to me, pivotal, and just conversations that happened to be at the right time, the right place. So I always make it a you know, now when I see my trainees, residents in particular, that if they kind of have that knack for emergency medicine, I always make sure that I tell them that, because that's really what kind of pushed me in that direction. And had that fellow not had said that to me, I don't know if I would have really considered it.
Yeah, you might be in a practice somewhere. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, isn't that funny how that synchronicity and serendipity of those conversations can spark the dreams?
Yeah.
So did you grow up in Milwaukee?
And I did, yeah.
Okay.
That's where I'm from here.
So born and bred. And then was it always a dream to get back to Milwaukee, or did you think you'd end up somewhere else?
You know, I didn't care either way. You know, I went to Madison for medical school, and then like I said, I went down to Kansas City for residency, and I just kind of the way life worked and where I got into my training program, I came back from Milwaukee for my fellowship. And once I graduated there and was looking for jobs, I was really torn staying in Milwaukee. I love being near family. I love the city. I love the people. I love my colleagues. You know, Megan Schultz is a dear friend of mine, versus, you know, do I try somewhere else? And I decided to stay and, you know, see what I could do here. And I made a great decision.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes. Yes. Well, and so you go into medicine, you go into pediatrics, you go into ER, emergency room PR. And then as you sort of alluded to at the beginning, that the person in charge said, let's try this research out on suicide. So that's sort of where you start. And for that, you get all these accolades, right? You're on 60 Minutes. There's a beautiful interview on WPR. You win a 40 under 40. And I'll put all these links. There's so much out there about all this work you did. So people who are really interested in the work you do on suicide can find that is out there. But what is it? What do you think it is about adolescence then that kind of appeals to you? Because that's that is hard.
Yeah, you know, I like that you can kind of be real with them. And, you know, there are times you can just not sugarcoat things and be like, what are you doing? You know, like, and I like being able to have that real conversation, especially when it comes to some of the sex stuff, you know, like, okay, do you know how babies are made? Yes. Okay. What are you doing? Well, I'm having sex. Okay. Are you using a condom? No. Are you on birth control? No. Okay. So what's the outcome? You know, is that what you want to happen? And if it does, then what are we going to do? And, you know, I like being able to just kind of walk them through these steps, because they're teens and they don't always think logically.
Yes. Right.
And, you know, like, hey, I don't want to keep on seeing you in my ER for, you know, with the police. Like, what can we do to get you out of that trouble?
And
having that kind of real discussion with them. For a while, when I first started, I also thought that teens opened, I still think they open up to me well, but at first I was like, I think it's because I look a little younger and they feel like they can relate to me. Now as I'm like 40, I'm like, okay, well, maybe not so much anymore.
You still look gorgeous.
Well, thank you. I think they think that they can relate to me and me.
Yes.
But it just comes kind of natural and easy to me to talk to teens.
Yeah. Well, and that's what Megan said. If I can quote her, she said about you, she said, Michelle has the hard conversations with adolescents that no one else wants to about pregnancy and sex, even anal sex and weird stuff that you would never talk about with your parents. Dr. Pickett is on it. So
that's what I do. That's how I am at home.
Well, so where should we start here? And listeners, I just want to say, if you're driving in a car and you've got kids in the back seat, maybe, you know, monitor this, use your discretion. But can you kind of set the scene for us in terms of both your research and what's happening in Milwaukee? What's going on here?
Yeah. And so when we're talking about the STI sector. Yeah.
Right? We're talking about sex now.
Yeah, so Milwaukee, we are seeing high rates of STIs among all ages. In general, kind of overall in the country, that 15 through 24 year olds, they have the highest rates. Women in particular have the highest rates of STIs. Mm-hmm. And Milwaukee, let's see, in 2019, 2020, when the CDC, they don't keep this or report, I guess, the statistic anymore, but they looked at the 50 largest cities and kind of rated them in their kind of rates of STIs. And for chlamydia and gonorrhea, Milwaukee was 2 and 3 or 2 and 4 or something out of the 50 largest cities.
Yeah. Wow.
So we got a lot. We're starting to see our rates of syphilis increase. It's been increasing for a while in Chicago. So it's just kind of a matter of starting to increase here, like everything does. So we have lots of STIs going around in that kind of younger, you know, adolescent, early adulthood group. So with my research, I have done kind of a little bit of everything when it comes to it. I have talked to kind of, you know, serving teens and how do they feel about sexual health care? Where is their knowledge about things of that nature? I am trying to, I've done a pilot study where I looked at using a different type of specimen to diagnose chlamydia and gonorrhea. And I'm awaiting, hopefully we'll get funded for a lot more money to kind of make that a very large study. There's this really cool thing that no one really knows about outside of medicine, and even in medicine, they don't really know about it. It's called expedited partner therapy. Mm. But what it does is it allows providers to, if they're treating their patient for chlamydia, gonorrhea, or trichomonas in Wisconsin, they can give their patient a prescription to just go ahead and give their partner. If they don't think their partner is actually going to go to the doctor themselves and get treated, or partners, they don't think their partner or partners will go to the doctor and get tested, then there is a law that now most states allow it, and it's recommended by the CDC. If the partner isn't going to go get seen themselves, but the doctor can write a prescription and go ahead and give it to the patient to say, here, then give this to your partner, give them this information sheet, and we'll try to reduce risk, you know, reduce infection that way. The super cool thing in Wisconsin, and not all states are like that, but if the patient doesn't know their partner's name or doesn't want to give the doctor their partner's name, we can write the prescription without a name. And you can just write expedited partner therapy or EPT on the prescription and take it into the pharmacy and get it filled. Now, if you want to use insurance to pay for it, you do have to eventually disclose a name. Yeah. But it's a super cool thing that, one, not a lot of healthcare providers know that, which I've found in my research. Yeah. Not a lot of patients know that, because why would they?
Yeah.
And actually, the coolest study that I did was kind of a secret shopper type of study. And so I had patients, which were my research assistants and medical students, have these kind of nameless prescriptions and go to 50 different pharmacies in Milwaukee County. And they tried to fill the prescription, you know, without the name, like, hey, you know, I got this. Can I get this filled here? And more than half the time, they weren't allowed to fill it because people just didn't know. Pharmacists and pharmacy techs didn't realize that, like, this was a legal practice in Wisconsin.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So from there, I talked at like a Wisconsin-wide like pharmacy conference to try to increase the education surrounding this. Talked to anyone I can talk to about it, really, because I think it's such an underutilized tool that could really help us. So with teens, it's great when they come and see them, but they have so many barriers to, one, you know, just getting to the doctor, like, and especially when it comes to sexual health care, if they don't want their parents to know. And in Wisconsin, and in actually most states, I think every state, teens can get tested and treated for STIs, and we can't tell the parents without their permission.
Oh, okay.
In addition, with birth control too, they can get started on that.
Yeah. Is there an age for that?
So for HIV testing, it is 14 and older. Okay. So most kind of people use that 14 age, but kind of in the law, it is for HIV specific testing.
Okay.
And so I'm always, whenever I'm like my teen stepkids, I'm like, just so you know, although you could always come to me and I will, I'm cool with this, we'll do it. But like, also tell your parent or your friends, you know, like if they don't want their parents to know, they can still go and do this. But it's hard because it's still a barrier. They still have to get to the doctor without their parent knowing. Then there's unfortunately the insurance aspect, which even though the physician might not say anything, that's a problem, which is why Planned Parenthood is awesome, because they don't need insurance there. And we don't have to worry about that. But if, you know, if you have a patient who got in chlamydia, they got it from someone. Yeah. And if that team now has all these barriers to getting to the doctor, we could use EPT and treat them. And eventually, yeah. If we treat everybody,
yes, yeah.
Bring down rates.
Do you have any sense for, as this is hopefully growing as a means of treatment, whether teens are using it or whether it's, I mean, you said in your secret shopper one that half of the pharmacists wouldn't do it, but are the teens that you're giving it to using it? Do you know that? Is there a way to follow up?
And that gets a little more complex. So we now start, and one of the problems, which is why we need better testing methods in the emergency department, is we don't have the test results when we see teens. And so we don't know who we're going to be treating and who we're not going to be treating at the time. So when we call patients with positive results, we always talk about your partner needs to be treated. Do you think they're not? And then we offer EPT. It's hard to follow up to know if they actually went to a pharmacy because I have no idea which pharmacy they're, you know, going to. Yeah. That's kind of on my long-term plans, is to kind of come up with a way and track it. I can tell you other literature out there from, there's one study from New York, not just in teens, but overall, where they specifically gave vouchers that they knew for free medicine that they knew if it was filled, because they would get billed. Mm. They weren't being billed as much as they would have liked them to. So there's still a disconnect that I got to work at and figure out how can we do this. I also think a lot of it stems to like sexual health education in the school system. And cause that's where teens are, you know, they're either learning this from the parents or from school, hopefully school too. I want schools to be able to give, you know, true health, you know, accurate, and like, here's a tool for you guys to use if needed.
Right. Yes. Yeah. So maybe getting in front of the, whoever's responsible for that kind of curriculum in Wisconsin, I mean, overarching in Wisconsin. I don't know if there's somebody in the DPI or.
Yeah. My school district, I was on the committee to kind of help revamp the sexual health curriculum, and it got passed by the board. So we are super excited that it's a very comprehensive program that starts like kindergarten through high school and kind of builds and builds on it.
So. Oh, good. Good. Yes. So needed. I wonder if you can speak a little bit to, in terms of what you're seeing, the disparity. I mean, we know Milwaukee is a super segregated city. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you see in terms of sexual health there?
Yeah, so there's a huge disparity. There is a disparity not only in like who has infections, but also who we're testing for, which I think is kind of a circular thing. So our kind of Black and brown patients, not just teens, but kind of overall, have much higher rates of chlamydia and gonorrhea. I think when I was writing a grant a few years ago about this, like up to 9 times, and not that's all ages, as much higher rate, 9 times higher rates than our white patients, which is a lot. And I think, though, one, it has to do with kind of the social circles and who we hang out with. But two, I think it's health provider bias. And we are testing more. And that I think I know we're testing more because I have seen the results and the data. So we are testing our brown and black patients more frequently, which is great because I think we should test every team. Mm. But the more you test, the more infection you're going to find. So if we're not testing our white teens as much, we're not going to find as, you know, as much infection, and their rates are going to look arbitrarily lower. When you look at the youth risk behavior survey results, which that's a survey that goes out to middle and high schoolers every 2 years throughout the country. Anyone who's had teens in the public or in school system have gotten like, hey, kids are going to take the survey, and it talks about a whole lot of different things. So there are some questions on sexual health, and the teens are having sex at the same rates. There's really no differences there, and really no differences in kind of the risky behaviors, as in like no condom use and that sort of thing. So I think some of this is some of the disparities that we're seeing in infection is because of the differences in testing, and it's then you go, oh, it's a kind of, like I said, a circular thing. So now we have higher rates. So then providers, you know, whether consciously or unconsciously, are testing our brown and black patients more, finding more infection, and then the rates are higher, and kind of goes on and on. As I mentioned, that tablet-based study that we are, where we are looking at sexual risk of adolescents and testing them. So I'm just one site of that. The two women who are running the study, they're Jen Reed, Monica Goyle. They do not live in Milwaukee. One's in DC, one's in Cincinnati. They're amazing women, and my mentors. So they came up with this idea. We're actually just going to be presenting the kind of racial disparities data in May. And one way that we kind of got rid of those testing differences is through the screening, tablet-based screening, because during one of the phases, it was called the universal phase. And with that, we just asked through the tablet, asking kids, do you want to be tested? Yes or no? And if they said yes, you know, then the provider got an order and like tested them. And when it was done that way, we didn't see any disparities. And when we took out that kind of provider potential for bias in there, because it was really just the teen saying, I want to do this, I don't. And teens were kind of tested at equal rates, which is awesome. So
yeah,
somehow we got to figure out how to continue that and kind of make that standard practice everywhere to reduce those testing differences and disparities that we're seeing, which I think ultimately will impact some of the overall disparities.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. Cause in my head, what I was thinking you might say is that even the testing was not as frequent, but you actually said the opposite, because I just would have assumed that sometimes the lack of, I don't know, health insurance. I mean, all the things, the poverty, the health insurance, the housing issues, the substance, you know, all the things that would make it harder to get tested. But maybe does that make it maybe harder for treatment as opposed to testing some of those things?
Yeah. And I should preface it by saying this is all kind of emergency department specific data. So, you know, where people are getting tested elsewhere, I don't know about the differences.
Sure. Okay.
There, besides from what is in the literature, that from primary care clinics, you see those testing disparities too. And I think it's because, unfortunately, providers have kind of something in mind when they think of a teen with chlamydia or gonorrhea and who is going to have that teen. You know, they think of the inner city Black teen versus the suburban white teen, which they both have it.
These diseases don't discriminate.
Right. And I think they're also, and I don't have any data to support this, but kind of anecdotally, I think some teens are more comfortable also speaking about it and kind of disclosing their, you know, their sexual risk or practices, whereas some of our kind of inner city Milwaukee teens are going to talk a lot more openly about this and freely about it. Versus some of our suburban teens are like, nope, we don't talk about this sort of thing.
We do, but we don't tell.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Which is why I like having conversations with health teens is so important. Yes. It's like we can all be so comfortable just talking about sex because it's part of life.
Yes. Yes. Did the pandemic affect, was there a slowdown in anything? Obviously, we're not seeing each other, or maybe they were doing it anyway. I don't know.
Yeah. So there actually was a slight decrease in rates of STIs kind of at the beginning of the pandemic. However, they increased shortly after. And what the CDC actually thinks is that we just weren't testing as much because people weren't going to, you know, clinics. Like a lot of the STI clinics were shut down, you know, a lot of the non-essential things. There was a time where there was a shortage in like some manufacturers in the swabs or the testing reagents needed for it because they were focused on COVID testing and making products for that. So yes, rates did go down, asterisks that.
Interesting. Okay.
It wasn't actually truly rates went down. We just weren't testing as much for various reasons.
Okay. Well, and you've been in the ER for like a decade now. Are we
Let's see. I did my training, my ER training from 2012 to 15, and then have been like, attending since 15.
Okay. So almost a decade. How have you seen, or have you seen kids change and teens change in that decade?
Mm-hmm. So I think kind of one of the biggest things that we've seen is from like a mental health standpoint, and we are seeing so much more mental health needs. Mm. Our mental health visits have almost doubled from over a 10-year period.
Wow.
Actually, someone just sent me data about that just this morning.
Wow.
You know, I think it's twofold. One, I think it's not as taboo of a topic anymore. Mm. So people are talking about it more willingly, still not as much as I would like us to be, but still more talking about it more. Parents aren't maybe as ashamed, or we know we're just going to kind of try to deal with this ourselves, like, and are more willing to seek help. And then I think the pandemic had a huge impact on mental health care. Mm-hmm. As I do think, like, social media, I think, has a huge impact on mental health care, where, you know, some of the things when we were kids, like, you never had to worry about, you do something stupid and nobody's there to catch it on.
Yeah,
camera,
it's not going out, right, to the whole school on a Snapchat or,
exactly. And you don't have, you know, you're not comparing yourself to the perfect lives of people that, you know, your peers that you see on, that's curated for social media, mm-hmm, you know, because you only compared yourself to people you saw in person, because that was all there was. And so you saw them make just as many mistakes as you were. Like,
right,
you know?
Right.
So I think, from a kind of patient changing standpoint, or teens changing, that has been one thing. You know, we are, I guess, because now we're starting to screen more for, you know, STIs, like, we're seeing that more. But 10 years ago, we weren't doing testing for it unless you actually came in for
specifically
symptoms.
Now
we're kind of screening, like, hey, you want to do this? Sure, great, let's do it while we, you know, take care of your broken leg, sort of thing.
Yeah. Does this mean, if you're seeing this kind of change, and I'm assuming this is not Milwaukee specific, I'm assuming like the rest of the country, the rest of the world is seeing these kinds of changes in what's coming through the ER, does that mean that, like, will your training and training of future ER docs include a lot more mental health? Does that mean you have to kind of be more of a, I don't want to say therapist per se, but kind, you know, kind of step up in that sense?
Yeah, I think we, you know, when I was going through training, there was not a whole lot of focus on mental health, or like how to have these, you know, conversations, these tougher conversations with kids and their parents. Whereas now I think we do kind of teach our residents more on how to do that. I also think that I'm continually learning too myself, and just, you know, we're actually just now applying for another grant where we can try to bring in an intervention that is aimed at decreasing access to, like, lethal means.
Mm.
So whatever, you know, in the home, making sure we're locking up things and how to talk to families about that in a non-judgmental way, because we know that that's kind of one of the first things that's going to shut down a parent if they feel like they're being judged, because they, you know, if they own a gun and they don't want to be told get rid of it, that sort of thing, which I'm trying to tell people, let's be safe, but let's reduce our risk. You have it, okay, how can we make sure that it's stored safely and away from little kids, big kids, you know, everyone who might get it, who should get it. So we are actually just in the midst of, like, applying for a grant with my psychiatry colleagues, which hopefully if we get it, we'll kind of bring this training on this counseling for lethal introductions to us, our section.
Oh, okay. Well, fingers crossed. My fingers crossed that comes through. How, what do you think in terms of how things have changed in the social media and these pressures that presumably is then what you're seeing in the ER? Like, is that solvable, or are we down that track and it's just too late? And now we just have to, like, catch the, saying of going up the river. Like, is it too late to even go up the river? Do we just have to,
you know, it's hard. because I think there are a lot of positives on social media too. Mm. I think a lot of it is, again, in the communication aspect and talking with teens. And even before they're teens, before they have a phone, you know, before they're on social media, about what is, you know, not even just safe social media, because that's a whole nother.
That's thing, another episode. Another
yeah. But also kind of, you know, when you see people posting stuff, you know, kind of take it at face value and try not to compare. And which I think leads to talking to kids and like building up their self-esteem from a very young age, and kind of that internal competence and internal pride, where they don't feel like they don't have to always compare. But it's hard. I'm an adult and I still compare myself.
Right. Yes, I totally.
Yeah. So I think a lot of it is that communication with kids and making sure they realize that that's not necessarily real world. What you see is not real world. Mm. You know, talking about who are maybe good people to follow versus who are not. Trying to make sure they realize that anything you do can be, you know, someone can be recording that and putting it on. So something that, again, we didn't have to worry about, and limiting, you know, I'm not trying to be the social media police, but I mean, teens can just scroll endlessly,
know, through talking adults. Right. Yes.
True. Yeah. Talking adults. So, you know, how can we use it in a healthy, kind of limited way versus this is what we are living and dying for? And, you know, let's work on kind of real life relationships too, not just social media relationships.
Yeah. Well, and it sounds like that would be helpful. That's just going to be the helpful thing, is teaching kids how to do relationships, how to, whether it's, you know, sexual relationships or personal relationships or friendships, you know, how to stay present. Yeah. And I feel like I bring this up in every episode, but this idea that the Surgeon General just said, we're in this epidemic of loneliness, you know, how do we keep kids connected with each other and even with their parents for things like this too, you know? Yeah. So, yeah.
And yeah, communicate with words and not just emojis.
Yes.
Like, and actually, you know, picking up the phone and having a conversation versus just everything via text. Yeah, it has its uses and it's great and I love it, but it also, it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah, for sure. Is there anything that you, based on what you see and knowing that oftentimes you can't tell parents because they're older, and now we're speaking in hypotheticals, is there anything that you wish parents knew? Anything that you're hearing kids saying about their parents that they wish their parents knew, or things that parents should stop doing, or just basically any advice for parents?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think teens are often just kind of scared to tell their parents, because they're scared of the reaction. They're scared they're going to get in trouble if they find out that they had sex. So I think, again, it kind of stems from that early communication where we know that this is a safe thing to talk about. And if you do choose to have sex, it's okay to come to me and it's okay to talk to me about it. You're not going to get in trouble for it. I'm not going to give you like a free pass and go all willy nilly whenever you want to.
Right.
But, you know, you're not going to get in trouble. We're going to, you're deciding to make these decisions. We got to make sure that you're making these decisions in a safe manner. So just like, you know, if you have some other infection or symptom, you go to the doctor to be seen. This is what we do now. You know, you're going to go to the doctor. You're having sex. Okay. Well, you're supposed to get tested every year for STIs when you're of that age, or anytime you have a new partner. So this is now what has to happen. It's not a bad thing. It's just
not a punishment.
It's things to healthy. Just like you go to the doctor every year. This is what we do now. And I think just being open and initiating that conversation. And I wouldn't expect teens, if you've never talked about this with a teen and you just kind of start like, hey, let's talk about sex. Like, okay, are you having sex? They're probably going to go, oh my God, no, not talking.
Right.
So you have to have this conversation multiple times. And when teens will, you know, see that you are really, truly genuine in your approach and you're not trying to kind of get up all in their business, mm-hmm. As they say.
Because that would be sus, really, or, you know.
Right, exactly.
Actually, I don't think you think they say that anymore. I'm outdated already.
No, I think that's an old one, yeah. But that's really coming from a place of love and care and respect. And we're also teaching you how to become an adult. Like, these are things that you are going to have to do in your adult life. Giving teens, when you're at the doctor, give them space to talk to their doctor in private alone. Don't start badgering them. Like, would you guys talk about?
Yeah, right.
Just let them have the, you know, that kind of private conversation, but know that be open for them if they want to talk to you more about it. But it'll take time.
Yeah. Yeah. And continued repetition. Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Over and over again. And one day, hopefully it will, like, you know, it'll click and they'll start, okay, yeah, you know, I think maybe it's time to get some condoms.
Yes, yes, yes. All right. Oh my goodness. Well, thank you so much for joining me. This has just been a delightful conversation. I know parents are, and listeners in general, and if listeners aren't parents, they can forward this to a parent that might need to hear this. I think it's super important in terms of keeping our kids safe and healthy, connected, and just in good shape, and knowing that, you know, not treating sexual health and sexuality as taboo or shameful or any of those things, you know, because it's not, obviously. So I just have a couple sort of rapid fire questions, if that's okay.
Yeah.
I asked Megan when she was in, just because I'm fascinated, what's the funniest thing she's ever pulled out of a nose? And I'm still fascinated. And it doesn't have to be something you pulled out of a nose, but what's the craziest thing that you've experienced in the ER? Have you got any?
Look, Kristen, live bugs in the ear.
Oh,
like, yes, live. Bugs grow, but like when you pull it out and it is still flapping away.
Oh, yeah.
Crawling away.
Yuck.
Yeah. So, that is.
I'm curious, and only because we just happened to have this eclipse that passed through. Did you get anyone in the ER who looked right at the sun? Does that head?
I haven't worked since then, so we will. We will see. Hopefully,
yeah.
Not.
Hopefully not. Hopefully, everybody was looking with their glasses.
Yes.
What's the best wisdom you've ever received from a patient, or a patient that you think about that maybe struck a just wow, what an old soul, or what a beautiful experience?
Yeah, wisdom. As I say, in terms of like some of the families that stick out to me, patients really being parents, especially appreciative when we bring up positive suicide screens and that we took the time to ask their kids. And I've had teens, you know, talking, I think I was talking about the sex stuff. And she said, no one's ever talked to this, like with me, like, before. Like, thank you. Like just talking to me like a normal kind of person, like you didn't make me feel bad about it. Anything,
yeah,
which is my goal. I'm not trying to shame anyone, like you said, we're just trying to talk about it.
So
those kind of that gratitude, like when you really can just have a genuine conversation and they're feeling non-judged.
Yes. Yeah. Are there any local Milwaukee women who are inspiring you right now, who you see as living their dream?
Oh gosh, there's so many. Where to start? So one of them would be Maddie Nguyen. She is a physician assistant here in our emergency department. She has started this food insecurity program within the hospital. So we ask all of our patients about food insecurity. And if they do have food insecurity, we get them a gift card that they can use right then and there. So they can go and grab a meal from the cafeteria. Mm-hmm. But then we also, the hospital will follow up with them in the next few days to see, okay, where are you living? Like, what resources are available to you nearby? And that has really kind of taken off throughout the hospital, which is amazing. Who else is there? Kristen Bach. She's actually one of my neighbors. She is a huge advocate for the LGBTQ community, and particularly LGBTQ youth, and working with the Courage House. So I think, yeah, I'm always impressed whenever I see what she has been doing and what she does. There's another one, Shannon St- Stabler is a business owner, a woman business owner. She's a chiropractor and left kind of her practice and opened up her own practice in Delafield, where she has a very kind of diverse, I guess, clientele, and is very diverse herself. Love it. And one of my other colleagues, Kathleen Beckman. So she has a kid who is older, I think 19, 20, and she is now just like living her life, doing all the things that she didn't get to do when she is younger, traveling the world, going skydiving, she's going to Costa Rica. She just came back from Australia. She just for funsies decided to start becoming a lifeguard at a pool. She's a physician, oh, and she
gosh. Wow, that's awesome.
Because she just likes to do it. So like all the things you're like, you know what I want to do? She is making the most of it. She got certified in wilderness medicine. Wow. And just, yeah.
That's so cool. Like, I love it.
So, I mean, I could go.
I know there are so many women. I keep saying I'll stop this podcast when I run out of cool women to talk to. Yeah. I don't think that's ever going to happen. So,
yeah.
I could be here for a while. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you. I'll follow up on maybe get some of those contact details for some of those ladies. And the last question I want to end with is if you knew a woman, or maybe in this case, let's say a teen who's sitting on a dream, who hasn't acted on it yet because they're feeling a little nervous about taking that step, what's your advice for them?
Try it. What's the worst that's going to happen? Right? You don't like it. You fail. Okay. You learn, maybe it's not for you. But try it. Talk to someone, whoever, you know, who is maybe in that role, and see how they got there, self-started. And I would just say for you, kind of any woman, you know, if you're seeing someone doing something cool, tell them, because I think that really uplifts women. And again, I wouldn't be, I think, where I am in my role if that one woman wouldn't have said to me, hey, have you thought about this? You're pretty good at it.
Oh, I love that. I love that. That's such a theme that I have found in this podcast, is women just wanting to lift each other up. And maybe that would be different if I was in a different city. I feel it really strong here in Milwaukee, but I think just across women in general, we are so good at lifting each other up. I know there's a lot of negative stereotypes about, well, like women and competitiveness and the vindictiveness, but yeah. I don't feel that. I haven't seen that. So
yeah,
love that advice. Thank you so much. And thank you for all you're doing to keep our kids safe and healthy, and for your time. I'm so grateful.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
This was fun.
It was easier than I thought.
Yay. Of course, I got to say it. This was such a fun episode. Oh my goodness. How important was this? So helpful to talk about what's going on in our city, what's happening with kids, with teens, with STIs. I love, love, love the point that she makes that talking about it with your kids, talking about sex is important. Getting it started early is important. It's not going to give them a key. It's not going to give them tacit permission. You're not going to plant ideas in their head. The ideas are already there. They know. So it's making sure that we're talking to them about what it means to be sexually active and how they need to take care of themselves. So I love, love, love this conversation. And I hope that she gets all the monies from all the grants for all the things, because the more we know, the more we can help our kids stay safe, stay healthy. And also the expedited partner therapy. Make sure that you talk to your kids about that, so that they know about that, so that they can share that with their friends, because you know they're talking to each other. How important to know that doctors can make those prescriptions if they need to. I will link to much of what's out there on Dr. Pickett's other work around suicide, the 60 Minutes interview, the interview on WPR, because that is also important. Suicide screening and talking about suicide with our teens is equally important to keeping them safe and keeping them alive. Stay tuned, because on Friday, I will drop the Cream City Digest with a little bit that I cut out of the interview today. because I want to emphasize it on Friday. And that is really a script. How do we talk to our teens? How do we get real with our teens and talk about sex? She's got some good advice. So make sure you listen to that episode on Friday. And if you like this episode, if you thought it was helpful for you and you could see it being helpful for someone else, would you forward this to them? I'd be grateful. Like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Leave a review. Hey, you could even buy me a coffee. Help keep the lights on here at Cream City Dreams. Join me next week when I will interview another Milwaukee woman living her dreams. Until then, Milwaukee, keep on dreamin'.